each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyce here with you once again to help wrinkle your brain. And once again, I'm just fascinated with the our wonderful crowd follows us, that's you out there tuning in. God bless you. I have to wrinkle your brain with more in-depth analysis.
Just wrinkle my brain, man.
Yeah, there we go. We got to do some more in-depth analysis of Timothy Gordon's. I'm calling it a landmark book, or a tsunami type presentation regarding the relationship between church and state. It's one of my favorite topics, as you obviously pick up if you're a regular listener to Winds of Change, especially here on Wednesdays. That relationship between church and state is the twilight, that time of day. Twilight has always been a kind of mysterious time of day, is it not? It's not day anymore, and it's not night yet. It's twilight. You're sort of in between, and the area where church and state mix, where they come together. Clearly, there are areas where they don't mix, and it is very good that they don't. The state can and should try to make the best road system, keep our sanitary system functioning well, streets and sanitations. You see, they often have that people think of them as sitting around wasting time, because you see people so often at the side of the road working on a project.
My Lord,
and
destruction.
Well, yeah, like destruction on a pipe. When a pipe bursts, you got to send out a crew from streets and sanitation. That is a very marvelous. I do sometimes get mad, because sometimes you see five people standing there and no one working. But those projects are very difficult. I don't get quite as mad at them as I do when certain public officials just try to write their own moral code.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Danger comes from.
Danger.
That's it. But anyways, the streets and sanitation, it's a perfectly legitimate area of civil government. How to plan parks, let us say, versus industrial areas, you know. You got to have residential sections, you have to have industrial sections, all that kind of stuff. There's a great deal of an area that the civil government is certainly king and certainly has the last word, shall we say. And there are certainly certain areas of life that church, religion, would have its final say when we are searching for truthful answers about the nature of God, heaven and the supernatural. Well, the nature of heaven is built on the nature of God. That's something, that's a connection that is not often made, because the nature of heaven is now thought of as whatever makes you happy. Whatever your truth is, then that will be the truth of heaven. You could say many of those arguments can and should be the realm of religion. So, but then when they come together, obviously they come together, and there is a twilight zone, twilight area, not day and not night, and that's what the many of the questions that revolve around the relationship between church and state have to do. So I return to this wonderful book by Timothy Gordon. I'm hooked on it, fascinated by it, because a key idea that we need to pray about and think about, especially us Catholics, it puts a great deal of responsibility on our shoulders, if indeed he's right, and I believe he is right, where he says the American experiment, the nation of the United States of America, was, when it was founded, was wired Catholic. Was wired Catholic. I like that little phrase. And what the heck does that mean?
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It is brain wrinkling to accept that. A lot of people would say, you got to be crazy. You got to be kidding. Well, he's not, and I'm not, because if you analyze some of the great ideas that went into founding the United States, the best ones have tremendously long Catholic roots, and some of the things that we're experiencing today is the breakdown and the denial exactly of some of these Catholic fundamental ideas that came through Jesus Christ and the teachings of Jesus Christ. Oh, don't know. Where did that one come from? I'm not sure. Well, anyways, that's a good one. We gotta get into this a little bit more. America is wired Catholic. I like that analogy. It especially is potent. It's ripe with meaning in terms of modern day wiring, in terms of computers. And obviously, wiring in computers is not the same as wiring in a house. But they're related, because the wiring in a house, ever since Thomas Edison made the light bulb and started putting light bulbs into buildings and putting wires, electrical wires, all over the city, we created this incredible network where electricity flowed back and forth, and in that, those electrical impulses were the electrical signatures of different sounds, right? Or at first, just the light on and off the current. Anyways, I'm getting a little too deep into the scientific side of it. What I mean for us to think about is what ideas in the founding of the United States helped wire the United States of America like a computer or like a city is wired. There's anybody who knows computers realizes that there's something called software and there's something called hardware. And they both work, they both need each other so desperately. You can't program a computer. You can't write a program. You can't write the software. I suppose you could write it on a piece of paper, but it'll do nothing unless the hardware and the little microchips do the job of translating those ones and zeros into a gazillion different instructions for your computer to do what it does. And so America became a strong, prosperous, powerful republic in great debt to some of these Catholic principles. And so we need to investigate these a little bit. To review, he especially highlights six different aspects of not only the United States of America, but good republics that function as a where there's a representative form of government, where you send off every citizen doesn't vote on every issue, which is what democracy really is about. And when people clamor for democracy, they're not clamoring. They naively would want to burden themselves with the necessity of voting for every law or every policy or every rule that a government body would enact. Obviously, we would never get any other work done if we were constantly voting for things. If let's say down in the South in New Orleans, where the Mississippi River empties out into the Gulf of Mexico, and they were arguing about the height of the dikes that need to be established, or the water capacity of the gates that control the water flow. I, for one, don't want to have to vote on that. And to make a good vote, you would have to, in order to, let us say there was on the ballot and they were arguing that they should be 10 feet high, and the other says, no, they must be 15 feet high. And the one side that says 10 feet says that 15 is way too much money. That will take up too much money, and we can't afford to make them 15 feet high, and 10 feet is way high, is high enough. And the people that say 15 feet high, they're going to say, no, we have to have it for those occasional disastrous floods. You get the picture. You know what I'm saying. So in order to make a good vote on that, you'd have to do a lot of study. You'd have to study what Whoa. The engineers have to study.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that's we should know the limitations of a strict democracy. Are you going to cast your vote on the question of the 10-foot high or the 15-foot high dike? Are you going to just cast your vote without studying the details? What you feel is the better choice? Well, that's kind of what we're facing.
I don't know.
You should say I don't know. There are many many votes that we just don't know because we haven't studied the issue. So here we have this Catholic philosopher Timothy Gordon, who is trying to pinpoint and show how some of these fundamental principles that helped establish the United States of America came from Catholic. Here's the six main ones. I'll go to this way, and then we're going to dive into especially Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. James Madison is the father of the Constitution, as it were. And so we could see where he comes down, and he does a great service in writing the Constitution, but he makes a faux pas. He makes a fundamental mistake, and we are seeing that mistake lived out, as it were, before us. So here's the six areas of the founding of Americanism that depended on Catholicism. One, first and foremost, at the top of the list, is the natural law. Natural law theory is specifically Catholic because it is what motivated Catholicism to fight early Protestantism. Catholic law was the idea that you could determine or you can discover God's will, you can discover truth by studying nature. Science itself has that Catholic spirit to it that recognizes that nature is kind of a fingerprint of the intelligent design of God. And the reason why natural law flies in the face of fundamental Protestantism is because Protestantism declared two things, namely faith alone is all that matters in order to get yourself to heaven, and scripture alone is the only source of authority that guides us to truth. So anything outside of the scriptures is not going to get you to the truth. Good enough. So anyways, the natural law is the first one. The second component is the idea of let's make a government as small as possible while maintaining this representative form. I guess you could certainly say a monarchy is smaller than a republic because a monarchy has a king and his advisors around him. That could be very small. A republic has to be bigger because it needs representatives representing the different places in that republic. In our case, at the beginning, 13 colonies, and now 50 states, of course. And so that small government is built on a Catholic concept called subsidiarity. And we got to investigate. We got to see why what's going on in our society today is a real affront against this principle of subsidiarity. Not only the bigger and bigger government, like Dennis Prager often says, the bigger the government, the smaller the citizen. So those two things. Oh, and Nick wants me to take a little break here now. I just got to the first two of the six, but we'll get these, and then we're going to dive into James Madison, I assure you. Okay, so stay tuned, my friends. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning, and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, is taught by our highly educated and dedicated teachers. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change. On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Koska is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance. Confessions 4 days per week and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just two blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org, and enter into the presence of Christ.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Father Tom Coy's here. Trying to explain... a great responsibility for us who consider ourselves Catholic. Now I say it that way because I know I do, being a Catholic priest. There may be some people that may not be a part of a Catholic church, but there are a lot of Protestant Christians who like to consider themselves Catholic. I had a Lutheran friend who always insisted that she was Catholic, to which I said, "Well, it's more than just holding on to certain principles that we would share, and certainly there are things that we share, quite a few, and that's good. We need to hold on to those. But Catholicism is even more than that, shall we say." Okay, so Timothy Gordon is trying to explain how America and its founding fathers wired America Catholic, even though we've all been taught that, and it is greatly understood that it was Protestant Christians who were the great majority of the founding fathers, and they were not Catholic. As a matter of fact, Timothy Gordon says in his book, and I think it's very accurate, America was founded by Protestants to keep Catholicism out. As a matter of fact, if you look at the history of the Revolutionary War, one of the reasons, besides the stamp tax or the tax on tea and all those financial matters sparked the revolution, one of the reasons that you don't hear about is the fact that King George III and England, even though they had their anti-Catholic spirit themselves, they didn't prevent Catholics from moving in. The British soldiers wouldn't fight or wouldn't prevent Catholics from coming into the 13 colonies. They did settle up north in Canada, and when some tried to come south, the American colonists had to fight them back, and the British soldiers weren't given orders to do such a thing, so that got them a little bit mad. So, but anyway, so even though there's this, we're taught quite naively that it is Protestant principles that established America. It is Protestant people that used Catholic principles, or you can even say plagiarized Catholic principles. They took what they found good in Catholicism and used it. It's an early example of cafeteria Catholicism. You might hear that word every now and then, and it's a descriptive word of how many people try to live. It's the Protestant way of living Catholic. What I mean by that is Protestants are very, very adept and have a long tradition of if you don't like some teachings, you form your own church. Without those teachings, you go along and you create your own creed, or you get rid of a creed altogether. The fact that there's something called cafeteria Catholicism in Catholics today, is like the Protestants of the founding father times. They liked some things, but since they knew they were forming a country to keep Catholics out, they're just going to hide the fact that these great ideas came from Catholic tradition. So I said before the break, the first and the most important one is the natural law theory, and everyone listening has to have a strong sense of why that's so fundamental to Catholicism and why Protestantism, as well as scientific secularists or secular scientists, reject what is typically understood as natural law that came to us from Catholic tradition. The other one was a small system of government because of the important principle of subsidiarity. The third aspect, and this is what you see in the Founding Fathers quite a bit, is the necessity of a moral citizenry. A republic cannot stand, it will collapse if the citizens lose their moral character. There was a common, very common recognition that we can make this form of government work if the citizens maintain strong personal morals in their lives. Interestingly enough, too, he meaning Timothy Gordon, has a very unique take on the fall of the Roman Empire. You know, I always grew up realizing that the Roman Empire fell in the 400s, of course. At least the western part of the Roman Empire, the eastern part of the Roman Empire lasted till 1000s. But the Roman Empire that we think of in from Rome, the western part of the Roman Empire, and there's even the famous book, The Fall of the Roman Empire, right? And we know that so many people have said it collapsed because there was moral weakness within, and it made the attacks from the north, from the tribal, the barbarians and the Visigoths and all the northern Germanic tribes basically able to wipe out the Roman Empire as we knew it. But Timothy Gordon has a little twist on it, and I think it's a beautiful twist. Instead of thinking the Roman Empire fell, you can just as well say that Catholicism saved the Roman Empire. What do we mean by that? Is that, the Roman Empire that was controlled and ruled by pagan emperors who modeled their thinking and their administrating based on false gods and the concomitant false or the accompanying false morals, as it were. So it was weakening. It was shaking. It was ready to fall. But Catholics, as soon as they became part of the Roman Empire, converted the Roman Empire to a Catholic version of the Roman Empire. And, of course, everyone knows what it was called, the Holy Roman Empire. and that is a beautiful insight, my friends, because it is so important to see the continuity between the pagan Roman Empire being threatened with collapse because of the lack of a moral citizenry, and also the Catholic people, the Catholic leaders and teachers infusing this sense of natural law, the idea of subsidiarity. The Roman Empire was saved and transformed into the Holy Roman Empire. Anybody who's not Catholic probably has a real negative attitude about the Holy Roman Empire. If you go to any kind of school and you listen to any kind of teacher that's not a faithful Catholic, they will inevitably explain the Holy Roman Empire in very negative terms. It was cruel and authoritarian and hurtful of citizens and all the rest, but it's really an unfair criticism. Catholicism really did save the Roman Empire, and it became the Holy Roman Empire. It's interesting that the popes and the Catholic leaders let that name survive. They let the name survive. They just added the word "holy" onto it, and it's sort of a reference of, yes, the Roman Empire, even with its pagans, gods, and everything, had great foundation. They had a lot of great ideas. Yet they were lacking something, and Christianity gave it that something. And so it would be as if we discovered the fact that the United States of America needs Catholicism, so we call it. There's brain.
You just wrinkled my brain.
No doubt about it. As if I were to say, let us now create the Holy United States of America, or the Sanctus States of America, or something like that. That's the kind of transition that happened from the pagan Roman Empire to the Holy Roman Empire, which, of course, guided by Catholic thought. So, okay, so we're at the third of the six wirings, Catholic wirings of the early republic known as the United States of America. The fourth one is you need a clear, non-obscure notion of personhood. The very appreciation of personhood is an awakening to a Catholic concept. How is that? I think it has a great deal to do with the mystery of the Blessed Trinity. Personhood as something different than just pointing to a human being over there and saying, look at there, person. Obviously, we can walk around the city, we can walk around the world, and you can see a lot of human beings here and there, and you will say, ooh, look at that person. Very nice. You recognize the personhood of that. But a lot of people were not going to recognize as persons. There's one of my favorite scenes in the great Civil War movie, Gettysburg, where the the Irish soldier is arguing or discussing the issue of slavery with Colonel Chamberlain. And Chamberlain is saying, even though he hasn't met many black people, he says he believes they are persons. He looks into their eyes and he sees a man. There's the divine spark, he calls it. And the Irish sergeant says, "Well, darling, Colonel, my darling, I admire you because you're an optimist. But I tell you, where I come from, there's a lot of times one man looks at another and he no longer sees a person, but just a dead dog. There's no more difference between." That's his assessment, unfortunately, being the Catholic in the argumentation there. He's shedding light on a difficult aspect of human nature. Yes, there is a divine spark. Yes, there is a person there, but that person can be a wicked person, a fallen person, a evil person. So, okay, we got to take another break already. We're just plowing through these. Okay, so that the fourth one is the clear, not obscure notion of a person. That's very Catholic, and that was written into the Constitution, as it were. At least the ideas of the founding fathers. We'll be right back, and I'll continue with a couple more. And as promised, I got to get to James Madison. We can't forget old Madison. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Save the dates for Prairie Fest. Friday through Sunday, August 9th through the 11th at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois.
More info at ByzantineCatholic.com.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, At 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, two blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm just enamored by Timothy Gordon's book, Catholic Republic. It's a new and exciting way of doing apologetics, in the sense of shining light on Catholicism, seeing how beautiful it is and how important it is, how it's been used, and how it's being abused today, and how our country's downfall is a direct result of its neglect. Apologetics is usually considered kind of explaining the differences between Catholic teaching and practice versus Protestant teaching and practice, or even non-Christian religions and everything, but it especially focuses on the disputes and the differences between Catholics and Protestants. It's very important to think about those things. They're not unimportant. They're not just feelings of different. They carry with them, the differences carry with them profound beliefs and consequences for society and for ourselves. So, okay, the fifth, I'm trying to name the sixth key areas of the founding of the United States that are really the wiring of the United States with Catholic ideas. One, the first one, natural law. The second one, subsidiarity, or the smallest government as possible in a series of hierarchical stepladders, as it were, stepladders of authority. The necessity of a moral citizen, the third one. The fourth one, a clear and a constant polishing, a constant attention to what the human person is. The fifth one now, he talks about how there are great economic benefits to the non-dysfunctional family for society. Another way of putting that, you put it, take out the negative, you could say a dysfunctional family and a whole nation of lots of dysfunctional families carries with it economic burdens, economic crosses, economic disasters. In other words, keep the family in a functional way, have husbands and wives live together for life, have their children love and kind of respect and get along, as it were, have a functional family, and there are oodles of economic benefits to a society. Take out that. Let dysfunctionality take over the day within families, and economic maladies follow. You could easily see that. Obviously, when a husband and wife divorce, they gotta find new places to live, and it would have been much cheaper if they got along and didn't have to spend all that money on two different houses. They could live together in one house, much cheaper. It's kind of the reverse reason of why people say they have to live together before they get married. At that time in their life, they're enjoying each other's company and they want to sleep with each other and have the joys, the benefits of marriage. But the first and foremost reason, if any kind of moral challenge is brought up, is that it's too expensive to live separately. It's cheaper to live under one roof, and they're exactly right in that regard. Go forward and talk about and analyze and survey the problems of divorce, and you can find out a whole lot of other economic problems, or the tension, the stress that occurs in a person's heart and their mind when there's great tension and stress within family members, you could say is a great cause for drinking or drug addiction or other kinds of avenues where people spend their money not on the most important things. Could be drinking, could be alcohol, could be gambling, all sorts of things like that. So you see what Timothy Gordon is getting at, that strong and functional families have an economic impact. The Whoa. Sixth one. Oh, yeah, there's,
you just wrinkled my brain.
I hope I did. Because it's a key, very, very, very key, right? That's why we have a tremendous moral obligation to try to make it work, to do the best we can. Obviously, we all know that sometimes people reach their limits, and the divorce just can't be avoided. Here's what I say sometimes to people that I come for counseling when they're especially contemplating divorce, and I'll try the best way I can to try to get them to see the other person's perspective, to try to reconcile, to try to love each other in their deep differences. But when you come to this point, then I say perhaps the divorce is the better option. When it comes to a point where staying with that person contributes to your pathway to hell, then you may have to separate yourself from that influence that's turning you into a bad person. It can happen. Sometimes a spouse can turn someone into a bad person. And that's why I say it accelerates the rate at which the person marches to hell. Then it's time to parachute. You don't want to end up in hell. You want to end up in heaven. And therefore, even though we strive to the best of our ability to stay together, there may be times when that separation is part of your salvation, literally for eternity. Then the question comes up of, well, do you remarry? Well, then there is the necessity of going through an annulment process to make that sacramental bond truly sacramental again. Anyways, this is all involved in one of these aspects of the Catholic wiring of the American Republic. The sixth and the final one he speaks of is that faith, especially Catholic faith in Jesus Christ, it pushes us to make scientific and technological advancements because it knows that God gave us a brain. We're supposed to use our brain. If our brain can figure out better ways of growing wheat to feed more people, we have a moral obligation to do so. If our faith tells us, if our reason and mind tells us I could develop vaccines for different diseases, we should do so. And we should help people who are sick, on and on. There's so many things that faith pushes us in the realm of science and technology. Science and technology is so often pointed to as the enemy of religion, especially because there's so much crap on the computer, I guess, and the internet. That's the primary reason we hear, especially parents will speak so badly of the way their children are addicted to the internet or their phones because of the pornography and bad influences that can come through that form of technology. But it also has negative effects on how personal relationships are worked out, are developed. The whole idea of arguing with people on Facebook is something new that a lot of young people are involved in. Facebook is, if you had to draw an analogy to my younger days or the days before computers and all the rest, it would be like a bulletin board at a school or in the town square, and you're fighting with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your ex or your someone in school, and you constantly are pinning up negative or your arguments on the. Then everybody in school comes to look at them, and you can't take them down. And then people are going to misinterpret, or the person that it's meant for feels exposed in a way he or she shouldn't have been exposed. It does create, that's another. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is that Timothy Gordon is very right in saying Catholicism is necessary for the civil use, the important advancements in science and technology, but it comes with it warnings against using science and technology. Catholicism is quick to say, because you can, that doesn't mean you should. That's a very important principle. Where does that come from? It doesn't come from the Bible, strictly speaking. It comes from natural law, thinking about these things. You can certainly find stories and texts in the Bible that that you can use to formulate this theory or this principle, but you're not going to find anything in the Bible about the right and wrong uses of cell phones. It's just not, you're just not going to find it. So you need the Catholic sense of extra biblical wisdom in order to really live the modern life in the true Christian way. Okay, I know Nick's waiting for another little break here, so we're going to come back and try to get through this hour. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down. This way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation. One way or the other.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the Donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for listening. I was outlining through the majority of this hour the six principles that are necessary for any republic to survive and that were written into the early documents, especially the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. They were written in. These principles were written into our founding documents, but they were stolen from Catholic tradition. I want to expose this fact. Not to shake any finger at anybody, but perhaps to applaud some people. I could applaud, you know, flattery is the, imitation is the greatest form of flattery, as we sometimes say. So that the Protestant Catholic founding fathers were imitating Catholic thinkers in their construction of the New Republic is a form of flattery to Catholicism. As a matter of fact, on that note, I just saw a message from the son of Billy Graham. I think it's Kenneth Graham. He was writing about the breakdown of moral principles within our society today. And he used a beautiful, juicy quote from the Epistle of St. James. Now, you might say, what's with that? Well, you got to, obviously, Billy Graham is one of the, he was sometimes called the Protestant Pope of America. he wasn't Catholic, but he fought for moral principles, and in doing so, he was doing what Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, John Adams, and the like were doing. They were robbing a Catholic sense of natural law, and so, anyways, as we see. Radical abortion laws like just passed in Springfield, Illinois recently, as we see legislative bodies cheering radical abortion laws. The declaration of homosexual marriage as a natural right. Today, the early founding fathers would never have dreamed of such. And what Timothy Gordon is trying to get us to think of is, how did we get here? One of the things we have to accept is that these six Catholic principles have been neglected or ignored. And there were, let's analyze James Madison, because James Madison and Timothy Gordon's assessment is a peculiar figure in the Founding Fathers, because, yes, he helped write the— he's sort of known as the father of the Constitution. And he used some of these Catholic principles, but he also abused them or couldn't stomach putting them in as clearly as they should have been put in. And so he puts in the Protestant version of subsidiarity. What is the Protestant version of subsidiarity? The Protestant version of subsidiarity means when an underling disagrees with a superior, the right thing to do is to break relations and start your own church. and so that was kind of put into the United States Constitution vis-a-vis what is called state rights. Here's how he writes. He goes, I need to explain why such a constitution hijacked these Catholic principles. And the main idea behind the United States Constitution idea of federalism involves local rule and the keeping of power at the community level. This was largely to the good in early America. But federalism is supposed to yield small government. Instead, it delivered the exact opposite by our own time today. When you hear the word federalism and you're reading from the colonial times, you have to sense like James Adams trying to say, hey, we do need some kind of federal government to hold these divergent warring states together. So he goes on, here's why federalism was incorporated incompletely into the Constitution. So James Madison put some form of federalism, but didn't get the concept of subsidiarity exactly right. I'll continue here. In this incompleteness stemmed from the Protestant Sola Scriptura thinking and the scientific secular enlightenment thinking, they put the misunderstanding of the fuller Catholic version of federalism called subsidiarity. Here's what he goes on to say. Subsidiarity is more robust than federalism because its rendition of local rule operates upon liberty, whereas federalism's version, that is, James Madison's version of local rule, operates upon license. Okay, I got to read that again, okay? Subsidiarity, the beautiful Catholic principle, is more robust than federalism because subsidiarity's rendition of local rule operates on a true understanding of liberty, whereas federalism operates on license. And what's the difference between liberty and license involves moral principles. If you find a moral principle that's true and right, it's not going to be just true and right for the lower people on the totem pole. It's going to be true and right on every higher rung of the totem pole, especially the top rung, meaning the rulers. So in a republic, obviously, we get a sort of a sense of that when we complain about congressmen in Washington writing laws for the citizenship that they don't have to follow, namely like healthcare issues or paying off, sending letters without stamps and all the rest. Maybe you heard about this, but this, it's sort of sad to report it, but there's representatives that use tax money if they do get into sexual harassment accusations, they could use their federal money, taxpayer money, to pay off the lawyers to defend themselves. So, yeah, that is a crazy. So the misunderstood nature of American subsidiarity in James Madison, codified within the Constitution, led to its eventual degradation and forfeiture. Only the Catholic natural law can sustain a methodological liberty that does not immediately disintegrate like a counterfeit handbag. And of course, we saw that. That's a great example. That's great light to understand what happened in the Civil War. When a difficult moral issue comes, the non-Catholic view of subsidiarity kicks in. What is the non-Catholic view of subsidiarity? It's we at the top can't decide this moral issue, you decided on the lower level. And therefore, some states would say, okay, we decide slavery is good. And other states would decided, no, we think slavery is bad. And therefore, you introduce, the idea of subsidiarity without its sister virtue of moral principles quickly leads to the Protestant version of, well, if you don't get along with your superiors, you separate and form your own entity.
Just wrinkled my brain.
That's
man.
What was happening there. So it's a powerful way to see the beauty of Catholicism. It's a different kind of apologetics, my friend. So God love you for following along as best you can as I try to wrinkle your brain. Come back every afternoon at noon for the Winds of Change. You've been listening to the Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coys. This is listener-supported WNDZ. God bless you.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is wrong. time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide the wind.